Chapter 1. Rose's mother Marie sat on a wooden bench inside the Kingston bus terminal, avoiding the midday sun. She waited for Rose. A stout, dark-skinned woman, perspiration glistened from the fold in her neck. She dabbed the sweat and fanned with the handkerchief clutched in her palm. Sitting near the entrance at the sight of a bus pulling in, her head raised in anticipation of the 12 o'clock bus from Montego Bay. Every few minutes, she straightened the bag on her shoulder and limped with bandaged knee to the doorway. She checked her watch. The bus was 40 minutes late. She leaned against the door and, looking out, muttered about the dangers of the country road and petitioned God for the bus driver's due diligence. Anxiousness outweighed the joy of seeing her daughter come back to town, to her, after the man she married and moved away with died. A man Mary considered not marriage material for her Rosie, as he was blacker than night, with hands coarser than dry brush, not to mention him being twice her 24 years. Not even garlic tea could keep Mary's blood pressure down when Rose brought the news that she was going to try life on the other side of the island. The only consolation 2 years later, Rose was coming home with baby Audrey, more for her to love. During the time Rose lived in Montego Bay, Mary prayed day and night for a miracle to bring her Rosie back to Kingston. She thanked God the day she got word of her only child's return. Not that she objected to Rose carving her own life. Oh no, she still hoped for a stand-up man for her daughter, because she remembered having only £5, money she saved washing till her fingers blew. Realized that Rose's father had no plans for their future and upped and left him. She said, anything better than a man without a plan, and moved from Manchester to find life for her and Rose. Now Mary could dream again. The bus pulled into the terminal. She spotted Rose exiting the transportation, carrying her baby at her side. At first glance, she fretted. Her daughter looked spent, forgetting she had been traveling from daybreak. She called out, "Rose, Rosie!" When their eyes met, her smile reassured her, flooding her heart with bliss. Her face rounded in the biggest smile as she said, "Oh, Rosie," her arms open wide. Tears filled Rosie's eyes. "Mama, come, my darling, come." They hugged and cried. She took Audrey. "Is this my little sweetie pie?" She kissed the baby all the way home. With a song of thanksgiving in her heart, Mary made space for Rose and Audrey in her one-room quarters. But although good intention, her mother's pay at the baker could barely stretch for the three of them. Her offer to be a washerlady again while Rose looked for work was a suggestion Rose quickly put to bed, pointing out her painful fingers. That did not stop Mary. As Rose looked for work, she spread the word that she too was ready for a new venture, even with arthritic fingers. In the mid-50s, folks from rural areas relocated to Kingston due to scarcity in sugarcane and bauxite work. Everyone seeking new means of livelihood settled in the big city, adding to the dilemma of those already there, like Rose. But to her advantage, she had talent. She could style hair and make clothes and was the boast of her mother. Rosie's just like her father, good with them hands. Except, Marie lamented, Ben Crawford have no ambition. Him sit on him hands, don't apply himself, and expect better to find him. Rose had gifts, only now she had to turn it into fashion and let her gifts work for her. With little Audrey, she considered, if I get a job in a beauty parlor or a dressmaker shop, with Mama working, she couldn't keep an eye on her. She quickly summed up the situation in the tenement yard, where more women congregated than at a market sale on Saturday morning. One woman in the yard ran a haberdasher from her one-room house in the back. Watching the traffic flow in and out, she thought, there is opportunity for me to right here in this yard. As the new person in the big yard, Rose's trainer desired to rush out and set up shop, knowing she had to prove herself. Every morning she styled her hair in the latest do, flip, upsweep, and bob, and made herself seen around the yard. Soon whispers, comments, and outright compliments of her fancy hairdos poured in. She bought 2 more pressing combs and converted Mary's room into a beauty parlor during the days. Rose's budding business grew busier each day. She enjoyed molding and shaping short, long, and even dry coarse hair. Women with dowdy appearances were transformed with just a hot comb and tease. And although the women wanted their hair in the latest styles, when it came time to pay, they had all sorts of hard luck stories. Me shot this week because one of my baby need medicine, or a school book, or this, or that. Some women came right out after their hair was done and begged, "You can't trust me till my man get paid Friday." You name it, Rose heard it. At the end of the day, counting her earnings for the time and dedication put into the hairstyles, she questioned its worth. Still, hairdressing gave Rose an opportunity to hone her skills. She accepted the work she provided the woman as tit for tat, even though her baby needed food too, and she had no man bringing pay home on Fridays. Almost everyone in the yard had some form of daily hustling that were legitimate jobs, like cleaning, sorting, and delivering for nearby downtown stores. The more independent tenants sold bagged juices, peanuts, and other knickknacks on King Street and surroundings. A couple of men got dressed every morning but never went further than the gate, as if mayors for the community. They knew everything and everybody and were well compensated for their underhanded observations. At the standpipe, as Rose groomed alongside other tenants preparing for work, her ears were cocked. She listened in hopes of hearing a word that someone somewhere had connections to a job. She knew with her abilities there was more, and she wanted it. One day as she worked on one of the ladies' hair, the woman told her she worked at Bendown Market by Victoria Pier. The woman said she sold straw goods to tourists visiting the wharf. It sparked Rose's interest, and she inquired about the possibility of working there. Without hesitation, the woman offered to help her set up a stall at the pier. That night, Rose talked it over with Marie and she agreed with the shift in vocation. But after further thought, they both decided it made more sense for Marie to take the job at the market, especially with her debilitating knees. Marie met with Mr. Chin, the owner of the bakery, the next morning. As he unpacked his delivery, she explained that she could not take the pressure standing for long periods anymore. Before hearing her option, the slender, grayed Asian man glanced at her and replied, "Ah, Marie, what pressure? You don't stand for long and you could always use the stool," as he continued to open the boxes of produce. Marie bit her tongue, stifling what would surely have cost her and Rose the job. "Don't worry, sir. My daughter can't take my space." Mr. Chin stopped what he was doing and faced her. "Your daughter? Tell her I must come, man." He was only too happy to have her younger version.